Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Singeri in for Jane Lindholm. This week on VPR, you've been hearing our series, Vermont Farms, A Shifting Landscape. We're exploring Vermont's agricultural economy with the people who try to earn their living off the land. But how big a deal is agriculture in Vermont today? With $776 million in ag sales, Vermont is number one among the New England states. That translates to an economic impact of over $2.5 billion annually. Vermont also produces 42% of the country's maple syrup. And don't forget what Vermont's 800 dairy farms and 800 vegetable, fruit, and crop farms mean to the state's tourism economy. But there are trade-offs and challenges. Runoff from our dairy farms severely impact the water quality of our lakes and waterways. Many Vermont farms are reliant on migrant farm workers to stay afloat. Today, we're going to look at these issues and many more with Anson Tebbets, Vermont's Secretary of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. Anson, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us in.
So let's start with this rainy season that we've had. How has this affected the vegetable crop in the state?
Well, we just had this big event over late last week and over the weekend. And, of course, that's been a real challenge. Even before that happened, before the big weather event with the torrential rains, we were having some challenges with the growing season. So this just added another layer to that. We're trying to get our hands around that. We've asked anyone out there that's had issues with flooding, if their crops have been flooded, to make sure they document it, you know, take some pictures, make sure they get a handle on the losses that they've experienced, keep some records on that, and reach out to us. Also reach out to the Farm Services Agency, which is the federal arm of the USDA. I'll be meeting with them later this week just to get a handle on what they're hearing. I know at the top of the broadcast you were talking about the emergency response that happens on roads and so forth. We've been in contact with emergency management on this as well. So, yeah, it's been certainly been a challenging spring and summer. One good thing, though, the last 3 or 4 days we're getting a chance to dry out, and we need a long, sustained dry period here for us folks to regroup and figure out what's next.
Well, you've recently conducted a listening tour in your new role as secretary. What are some of the key elements that have been conveyed to you during this?
Well, I think one big thing was that agriculture is very important to Vermont. People love it. They want it to happen. They're rooting for our farmers to make a living and work off the land. That was one big takeaway. We also heard a lot about education. We have a new population that maybe has never been introduced to agriculture, and there's two parts to that. One, they want to be involved in agriculture. They may want to start a farm. They may want to work on a farm. So that's one aspect I think that we learned was, look, we need to find more opportunities for folks to get in agriculture with no agriculture background. Historically, it's generation from generation to generation that's been involved in agriculture. But there's a new wave of people that want to learn more about it, be it on a dairy farm or be it on a vegetable farm, or maybe it's developing a product and taking that to market. We also are hearing from folks, a younger population maybe not as used to what a farm is like. Mm-hmm. It's changed over the years. So I think there's some ag literacy issues that we heard about. We heard about water quality and the issues that both the public and the farmers are facing with trying to improve our water. Our farmers know that they play a big role in improving that water system, and they're working hard on that. So we heard that. And, of course, with dairy, a lot of discussion about value added. You know, supporting our dairy farmers because they have a big role to play. Dairy continues to be, you know, the biggest part of our ag sector, and they want them to succeed as well. So those are a few of the highlights. And then just internally, we need to do a better job, and we're working on sort of customer service within the agency as agriculture as well. When someone calls the agency and they need some help, we need to be able to respond quickly and get them the answers they need or the technical assistance. So there's some of the internal stuff we heard as well. So those are just a few of the headlines out of the tour.
Well, you've set up the entire show. Thanks so much. In just one answer. That's perfect. Well, let's look at dairy, because this is a major concern for most Vermonters. Milk prices are low. I think now maybe under $16 a hundredweight, which has farmers worried, as does tightening immigration policies. There's also nutrient runoff into our lakes and waterways that has everyone concerned. We'll start with the milk prices. Is conventional dairy farming sustainable at the price that's being paid on milk right now?
Certainly not where it needs to be. The issue right now, and it's been a longer, if people know the history of dairy pricing, it sometimes goes up and it goes down, goes up and goes down. This particular one is climbed up a little bit over the last 6 months, but it's not where it needs to be, where farmers can make a decent living. So that is of concern. And what's forcing this sort of stagnant area is there's just too much milk out there. And it's an international market. It's a national market. And dairy pricing can be really complicated because you go to region to region. Our needs in the Northeast are not necessarily the needs that maybe are for the South or for the Midwest or the West. Some regions of the country are really producing a lot of milk now. For example, Texas is producing about 14% more milk than they had in the past. We're running about 1% over what we have. So that's an issue, and that's keeping our prices lower than they need to be. And the international markets are very important. About one in every seven big truckload of milk is headed to an international market now. So if countries like, say, Mexico or China or, if the Europe puts a lot of milk into another country, that's impacting what's paid here. So it's complicated, and it's not only what we do in here in Vermont. It's a regional issue.
But can we cut back? Should we cut back? Will that help at all?
Well, I think that what we need to do is, and I think a lot of people are going to be working on this, is we need to figure out some new pricing system, and who knows what that's going to be. It's going to take a lot of effort from New England and New York and the Northeast to convince other parts of the country how to do this. And I think we do have to think bold about this, because I think everyone agrees. Farmers agree, processors agree, the public agrees. This current system is not working. Now, if everyone can get together in Congress and agree on something that works for all regions and our farmers, that is the challenge. But I think all would agree we've got too much milk out there, and we're not going to be able to probably consume it all here in the Northeast or the United States to make a difference. So I think we've got to figure something out. One thing we are going to do at the agency, we're going to convene the Vermont Milk Commission. Vermont Milk Commission is going to try to take testimony from folks, from farmers, from people in the processing business, from the public, from consumers. What do we need to do to bring to our delegation and to Congress about what could we have for a better solution for our dairy farmers?
Well, a lot of people will point to something that was a government program that they think worked. And you've mentioned New England and the Northeast, and it was the Northeast Dairy mm-hmm. Compact that was from about 96 to, I think, mm-hmm. 2001. First of all, was it successful? A lot of people look back and say, oh, that was great. Was it a success? And is there any hope of that happening again, something like that?
I would think our dairy farmers would say that was a success, and that was good for the Northeast. Now, other parts of the country probably didn't like that system because it didn't – the benefits to them were not as great. And as those things were played out in Congress, it came to an end. The thing about agriculture, it's really not a partisan issue. It's when you come to dairy pricing, sometimes you get commodity versus commodity, cotton maybe pitted against dairy and so forth. But it's not a partisan issue. It's mainly what's best for their particular region. And that's when it sort of comes off the rails when you're trying to do a one-size-fits-all for the country.
A couple years ago, dairy farmers were being urged to purchase insurance through the Margin Protection Program, the MPP. Mm-hmm. And even with falling milk prices, they really haven't been helped by this program, have they?
No, I would say most of our farmers would say they're not participating, and it hasn't really achieved what they wanted to do. So there's a lot of discussion whether to, you know, modify that particular insurance program for farmers in Congress. And there's a lot of debate whether that needs to be just thrown out or start something new. And I think those discussions will happen as Congress begins to take testimony on the Farm Bill. And the Farm Bill is the five-year sort of blueprint that's going to outline policies for all agriculture, whether it's milk, dairy, cotton, you know, wheat, all those particular things. And that will be debated in Washington over the next year or so.
I don't want to get too far into the weeds on the MPP, but can you explain why farmers haven't been
This is where it gets a little more complicated. Mm-hmm. It talked about the inputs, as far as how much feed costs were, and they were regionalized, and they were not as, something that may have worked, say, in Mississippi, just necessarily worked for the Northeast, because our cost of production, of course, here is a lot higher because of our climate. You know, we have a very short growing season where we can, you know, grow our corn or alfalfa or hay like that. And then that was part of it. It had more to do with sort of the inputs of it. It didn't seem to work for everybody.
What are your thoughts about a premium being added to locally produced dairy that, Vermonters would pay to support the local dairies?
I think there would be support for that, but the problem is we don't consume enough to make a big impact. The issue with that is we have a lot of farms, a lot of dairy farmers, so there's that one that you have to pay out over, say, 800 farms, and then we just don't have enough consumers here because we have a population of 600,000, and we do not have the authority to collect that premium, outside our borders. So that, that's been looked at. I think there would be support for that at some point, but it's not a kind of a realistic thing, because I think consumers would support that if they knew it was going back to their farm to keep that, the dairy farmer in business and helping their neighbor out. They would be able to do that. We just don't have enough consumers.
We're talking a lot about conventional dairy. Is organic dairy the answer for small dairy operations here in Vermont?
Well, it's certainly the answer for some. We have about 25% of our dairy farms now are organic, and that's a good number. And it all depends, and this is where it becomes a little and we have some that are transitioning from the conventional side to organic. It all depends on, where they're located. What size, what their family situation is, can they make it through that transition period? Because it is a substantial transition period to, get your feed transitioned over, get your animals transitioned. It can be as long as 3 years. So you've got to fill that gap. There are programs out there that are helping people fill that gap. It's certainly the answer to some. That's the issue we face in dairy. I think a lot of people think one size is going to fit every particular operation. I think that's a real challenge for folks to do that. But certainly organic's important to our communities. It's working in some places. It's working for some families. And we're about 25% right now. And it could go higher in the future years. And that's all possible.
Now, Anson, you mentioned at the beginning you used the term value-added products. Mm-hmm. This is big for dairy farms, that is finding more than just milk, ways to use that product, making cheese, yogurts, whatever. Have our farms explored that avenue enough? And what is the agency doing to kind of expand that?
And that's one really bright spot that's happened. If you look at the statistics, in 2009, we had about 27 on-farm dairy processors. The latest numbers, we have 76. So you can see that there has been a trend of people like, okay, I don't want to be in the commodity business. I don't want to sell directly to a co-op or a milk handler. Maybe I want to process my milk and make it into cheese. So that's happening, and we have a program at the agency that supports that. There's a regulatory part of that that it sometimes is a big hurdle to that. We have people on staff that are really working to get people, okay, here's what you really need to do where you're able to sell that product. And they really become, even though they're on the regulatory side, they are also the economic development side of us. And so we have people in our dairy division that can help with that, also in our agriculture development division. Do they need help writing a business plan? There are groups out there through UVM and the Housing Conservation Board, Farm Viability, that will help folks take that idea and make it a reality. and work on the business plan, because most people will tell you the key part of any operation in the early stages, you got to get that business plan. How are you going to get through that first 3 or 4 years so you can get to a point where you can really stand on your own feet and really do a great job with that?
We heard from Ray, who posted, "The milk pricing system here in the U.S. is a real challenge for a lot of farmers, as prices can fluctuate wildly, falling well below the cost of production, which makes it difficult to keep up with other costs of doing business, such as fuel, machinery, utility, labor, and feed prices." We also have a call from John in Waitsfield. John, thanks for calling Vermont Edition. What's your question?
Well, it's more of a sort of a statement to the Ag Department. I think Vermont really needs to take a look, a very hard look, at what we are doing and why we're doing it going forward into the next 40 years. Dairy is, in fact, not something that Vermont should be competing on the United States stage with massive agriculture. It just simply isn't going to be something that is going to be profitable for small farmers. We know that. We should be helping our farmers to change and retool to something else. And there are plenty of things out there to do that are profitable. These farms can be turned into. Some of these farms have massive debt, and we can help them to continue to be profitable because we reduce the number of farms producing strictly dairy for the dairy industry, so to speak, milk, cheese, for commodity-type products. And we should continue to encourage, you know, very small producers and larger producers on-farm processing and other processing, because they are being successful.
I think that's been a trend, John, and that's it's something that, you know, we'll do all we can to do to support that. But in the end, sometimes it comes down to the individual, the family. What can they do? So if you go to an on-farm situation where they want to, you know, say they have, you know, 50 cows, but they want to take that product and to make it with cheese, then they have to make a decision. Okay, can I do it all? Can I produce the milk? Can I market the milk? Can I sell the milk? I mean, sell the product that's made from that. So it's one of those collective things, and we're doing all we can to be as supportive we can to give them the information, because I think in the end, what we have to do with the agency is support as many people as we can, whatever they want to do. They've got an idea, they've got a system there. We need to get them the resources they need to make that informed decision of what to do, because some people do want to do on-farm processing and they would love to transition to that. I know VPR recently did a wonderful profile on the Silloway farm in Randolph, and from that you could see that they were adapting what they wanted to do. They had to make some choices. Were they going to grow larger? Were they going to grow bigger? Or were they going to add some things in their farm operation to make them more profitable? They're still a dairy farm. That was their core, but they transitioned into maple syrup production. They were doing some wood as well. So we need to support them as much as possible. And the other key part of that is the land, depending on what folks have for land. Do they have enough land to, you know, maybe grow larger if they want to grow larger? Would they have enough feed for those animals? So I think what we're trying to do is trying to be supportive as many ways as we can. And we're not in a situation where we can think we can go in just one complete direction. And that's going to solve everything.
Well, to put another quiver in John's arrow of getting away from dairy, there's the question of clean water, because mm-hmm. this nutrient runoff into our waterways, into our lakes, certainly causing problems. So can conventional dairy farms peacefully coexist with clean waterways in Vermont?
They can, and our dairy farms are going through a large transition now. Some have been in the regulatory aspect for a long time. Our large farm operations have been in the regulatory form. Our medium farms are in that. Our small farmers are going to be in that as well as we transition to this. We're spending a lot of money in this particular area. The taxpayers are of Vermont. In agriculture alone, over the next couple of years, we're going to be spending about $5.2 million in water quality improvements on farms. This is just the state dollars. There's going to be federal dollars as well, and then there's going to be the investment in the cost share by the farms themselves. We have a new set of regulations called the RAPs. They're called the Required Agriculture Practices. Those have been finalized at the end of last year. There's a ramp up various things throughout through those regulations. So, yes, it can be. Farmers are feeling for sure they're feeling the scrutiny, they're feeling the pressure. But from what I've been, you know, meeting with them and talking with them, they're talking about this more than they are talking about the price of milk. You know, 5 years ago, they would be talking about how we're going to improve the price of milk. Right now, farmers are like, what do I need to do? How do I do it? How can I make my practices better? They're doing a number of different things already. They're doing cover crops, you know, making sure the fencing is proper for animals, keeping them out of waterways, all kinds of things are happening on the ground. And they formed groups to get themselves informed, to make sure that they're working together. There's one in Addison and Chittenden County. There's one up in north in Franklin County. They've got a Connecticut River one, also meant for Magog. So is I would say in our dairy industry, it's their number one issue is like, what can I do and how do I do it?
Today on Vermont Edition, we're joined by Anson Tebbets, Secretary of Agriculture, Food and Markets. Anson, I mentioned earlier tightening immigration policies. Now, this could mean difficult times ahead for farms that really rely on migrant farm workers. So how is the Agency of Ag here in Vermont advising farms on this?
Well, since the new president, we had the new immigration orders. And that in that period of time, there was a tremendous amount of anxiety for our farm workers and our farmers as well. Because it is an important part of our labor. I think we probably have about 800 Latino workers on our dairy farms. There may be one or two here and there. There may be as many as 10 or 12 in other places. And what we're advising them, you know, there was fear that there would be so-called raids. That has not happened in Vermont. And we needed to find out a way of if that was to happen, you know, how would we get the chores done? Who would milk the cows? Labor, not only in the dairy industry is an issue, but other sectors in the economy too. Sometimes it's hard to find hard to find work. People, you know, it can be very challenging work. Some people don't want to do it as they had in the past. So we're trying to figure out a way what would happen if things changed dramatically. Right now, it hasn't happened, but we're just closely monitoring it, making sure. You know, there's a stable workforce out there, and so far, so we're doing all right. We've had a couple of high-profile cases of some people that have been detained, but right now it's sort of status quo, but there is anxiety for sure.
Jim is calling in from Brattleboro. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling Vermont Edition.
Hi. I'm on Cherryville Farm in Brattleboro, where I raise pasture-raised, whey-fed pork and shiitake mushrooms. The mushrooms is not an issue. I can, as many as I can grow, I can sell. The issue is still meat processing. I use a facility out of state in Massachusetts, and I've recently got a price increase. It's now to the point where I pay more than $3.60 a pound just to have the sausage made for me. Forget about the growing of the pigs and the feeding and everything else, and the fact that I have to make a profit. And I'm wondering, is there anything else that's being done regarding meat processing facilities? We started the one in Westminster, but it's had so many issues, I would never take an animal to it. And I'm wondering, what's the outlook for something, you know, to help alleviate this problem of being able to process the product?
I know about 10 years ago, we did not have the proper capacity, and I think we've made some progress of having more facilities. But I'm told in the meat industry, they need a steady volume of customers going through the plant to reduce the cost to the producer like yourself. And, of course, the other issue is a lot of folks want to have it all done at the sort of the same time. So they have maybe the bigger commercial accounts would take preference over folks that may have, you know, four or five animals. How many animals do you like to process, say, per month or per season?
Right, Jim? Now I'm doing 15 a month.
So that's a pretty good volume. And And you, of course, probably don't want to travel too far to take your animals, so you want to be in southern Vermont. And
well, right now I have a contract with the CSA out of Boston, and, mm-hmm. and I have to. They want to use Maple Ridge, which is up near up northwest of Rutland. So it's a 4.5-hour round trip for me, and I do that. But when I'm processing for to sell to restaurants or and I actually need the meat processed for me, I use Adams Farm in Athol, Massachusetts. Which is still, it's a 2.5-hour round trip, which isn't terrible, but it's more the cost. It's just getting very costly. You know, I've got $5.80 a pound into cost to break even on sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about making any money on it.
Have you explored other outside of Westminster in other plants in Vermont, or could we help you with that?
I'm trying to explore them, but again, there's a limit. You know, I don't want to drive to St. Albans,
right?
Or someplace crazy like that. It's a lot of time, and you know, what is happening with the Westminster plant?
I've not had an update on the Westminster plant recently. I can't give you an update on that. I know they're still processing and doing things, but I have not heard any issues with them recently.
And what about mobile slaughterhouses? I know there was one in the state operating. Is that still happening?
That was more poultry than you said yours was you're doing pork, right?
Right.
And I believe, and I was going to, because I'm so close to the Massachusetts border, in Turner's Falls, Mass, they had a system set up where farmers could come in and you could rent a facility and process your meat. You know, you'd go in there for a day or two and you could process your farm goods. Does Vermont have anything like that? Is there any talk about it?
Meat regulations can get really, really thorny, especially, you know, because there's two systems. There's the USDA, there's a federal plant, there's a state plant. So they can get really, really thorny. So I'm probably not the expert. Is there any chance – it's Jim, right?
Yeah.
Jim, can you call me later at the agency and we'll try to work through some of this? I've got some experts at the agency, Randy and our meat. He might be able to give you some advice and help you with this.
And Anson, this brings up a bigger, you know, question of we want our farms to be able to diversify, mm-hmm. but if there aren't ample slaughterhouses, for instance, for them to go into livestock, you know, what's the point?
We want Jim to succeed because this is the type of farmer we want. I mean, he's got animals on the land. He's got probably a quality product that he's trying to get to our restaurants. It's that part that we have to keep our eye on is the infrastructure and how important that infrastructure is for the processing, whether it be meat or whether it's dairy. So we need to keep our eye on that. And I'm curious if there's any other alternatives for Jim out there, how we can make this work so it's, you know, he can make a decent living as well off this. But it sounds like he's getting some increases at the plants.
Who want to diversify from livestock from dairy to livestock for meats, what do you suggest?
The first thing I would, if you've got a dream or you got a plan, I think the most important thing to do is, okay, get some technical assistance, get some technical help, get a business plan. And we can – there are resources that we work with the Farm Viability Program. People should seek that out because they can help, crunch the numbers. You know, can I have 40 jerseys and can I make cheese? Or can I have, 40 jerseys and can I start sugaring and run the numbers? And they can help you with that. So I'm a big fan, and we work closely with our deputy chairs, the Farm Viability Program that's run through the Housing Conservation Board. I think that's a great place to start because they'll write the business plan, and that's critical before you sort of go out there on your own and then figure it out at the end, well, maybe this is not going to work.
Another issue is we have an aging workforce. So is farming attracting enough young workers, younger workers, to make it a going concern?
We need to do a better job of that. And that's one of the things we did here on our listening tour is, you know, what can I have a career in agriculture? And where do I start? We have, you know, various places in education. Do I want to be in the vocational education program? Do I want to work there and then go work on a farm? Do I want to go to college, say go to VTC, where there's a wonderful program, a scholarship program called 2 plus 2. You can spend 2 years at VTC and then 2 years at UVM. Do I want to go that route? Or maybe I just want to dabble in it. Maybe I'm not from – you know, maybe I'm not from agriculture at all, but I don't want to take the big leap of you know, thinking about it. Do I need to take a workshop, take a program, get placed on a farm in an internship or a program and decide if, hey, maybe this is for me? Because we know the world now is people have multiple careers. It's not necessarily, you know, you have one job and you stick with it. People are going from career to career to career. And I think that's one of the things we're going to try to work on over the next year or so is to like, okay, what do I need to do to get involved in agriculture and bring more people into agriculture that they consider it as a career in agriculture?
Well, you grew up on a farm and it's not glamorous. The work is rigorous. The hours are long. What does the public need to know about agriculture?
I think people need to understand that, A, it is a business. And, you know, we just heard from Jim, you know, it's a business and there are challenges every day. It's rewarding. You've got to have an independent spirit. You've got to be able to take the highs and the lows. You know, one day things may be going great on the farm and things are going well and a piece of machinery breaks down and you've got to figure out how you're going to fix it and do I have the money to fix it. You've got to be able to deal with the ups and downs of the economic system of, you know, 1 month a dairy farmer may get a decent paycheck, but all of a sudden a month later, holy cow, it's become unpredictable. But the rewards can be extraordinary. You've got an independent streak. You're working with the land, which is not a bad deal. You're working with animals. That's not a bad deal. And you can see a lot and learn a lot. And those skills, if you can work on a farm and solve problems, you can solve problems in other forms of life as well. So I think it's a valuable opportunity. And I think if anyone wants to spend a summer working on a farm, if they get the chance, do it because you will certainly learn a lot about life.
Let's take another call. Tim is calling from Barnard. Tim, thanks for calling Vermont Edition.
Thank you for taking my call. So I wanted to reiterate a couple points but expound on them that your previous callers made. One about, you know, in regards to the viability of the agricultural industry, and your guest today has mentioned it's not political, you know, this is not each side of the aisle. Well, I want to say that it is. And I think I share a lot of frustrations with many people. I'm in the logging industry, which I consider as agricultural, too, and I've been into it generations. Now, we don't get the help and aid that a lot of farm and other agriculture industries do. And my frustration is that we've had a lot of democratic rules here in our state, and the regulations and restrictions that have gone since all the Clean Water Acts and everything like that. Now, I agree that no one is against clean water and all that. I want to have clean water, clean air, but it's not regulations that help the businesses be viable. It's regulations that restrict in such a way that makes their overhead costs in such a compounded amount that they can't afford to sustain their operation anymore.
Okay, and let's get Anson's answer to that. I mean, are we overregulated? Is that a problem with agriculture right now?
Well, one thing that we did in this since January is we're proud of a couple of things. One, no new taxes and no new fees, and we didn't add any new regulations. And the agriculture, and I would probably put forestry in that as well. They've had a lot of regulations over the last few years. We said, time out. We've got a lot on the table right now. We need to learn them. We need to digest them. So at this point, we've kind of like, okay, we need to pause here and we need to figure this all out before we add another layer because it's just too much confusion. And anyone will tell you in business, if there's not predictability in what you're doing, you're in real trouble. People need to have predictability, at least over a couple of years, 4 years.
Anson Tebbets is Vermont's Secretary of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Rick. And I got to solve that pork question.
Yeah, you do.
All right.
You got a big issue this afternoon.
Thank you. I got a lot of others, too, but that one's right on the front burner right now. Thank you.